Welcome to CAE Catalyst, Defense and Security Podcast. The word catalyst is most often associated with change. In the context of this podcast, we will be looking at the key drivers acting as a stimulus in bringing about results in the defense industry. CAE Catalyst joins experts from CAE and our industry to discuss relevant topics affecting our defense and security customers and community at large. From training to technology, we will discuss the catalysts that advance mission readiness.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of CAE Defense and Security's Catalyst podcast series. Today, we're speaking with two of our global experts in technology, training, and operational support to learn how CAE is enhancing defense force capability and accelerating mission preparedness by producing leading-edge training technology and training support solutions. I'm your host, Dr. Regan Patrick, Chief Learning Officer for CAE Defense and Security. We welcome today our guest, Dr. Sandra Scielso, Technical Authority from CAE USA, and Dr. Gary Eaves, Principal Technology Officer for CAE Australia. Gentlemen, welcome.
Good morning, Regan. Thanks for the intro. I'm Gary Eaves. I suppose you could describe me as a career simulationist. Done all sorts of different simulations, many years in healthcare, several in defense, planes, trains, automobiles, all geared around training and analysis of performance.
Thank you, Greg.
And thanks, Regan. This is a very exciting topic we're about to undertake. My name is Sandra Scielso. I have been over 20 years in modeling, simulation, and training, development of next generation technologies.
Great. Thanks, gents, very much. I'd like to get started on our conversation today. A number of really interesting topics to discuss as we look at training around the world and the defense industry in particular. So let's begin by a discussion here on global defense forces. They're grappling with a number of evolving and complex challenges and what many experts believe and describe as the decade of maximum danger. As an example, the recently released Australia Defense Strategic Review noted, in the contemporary strategic era, we cannot rely on geography or warning time. Emerging and disruptive technologies are being rapidly translated into military capability. I'd like to begin our conversation today by exploring this statement, specifically regarding a loss of warning time to organize, train, and prepare for major conflict. Sandra, I'd like to begin with you. How can we accelerate preparedness of our military personnel, particularly our mission aviators, during this time?
And this is a really critical topic, right? So warfighter readiness, it's always at the forefront of any defense organization with our allied forces. And what we see is a slow take in this paradigm shift, moving from our standard way of providing training and education towards this more adaptive way, ensuring skill acquisition and readiness that use novel technologies. So I think we're in the midst of that movement, of that paradigm shift, if you will, from a lockstep, one-size-fits-all approach to training, to an environment where you can tailor the training experience to the student or the operator or the warfighter to fit a particular need. So there's a lot of research going on in how you can have adaptive frameworks and how you can have different types of, you know, they're called andragogical. So it's adult learning frameworks and test what works and what doesn't work. So how can we accelerate preparedness? It's almost like a loaded term because it indicates that we have to have a solid understanding of all the knowledge, skills, and abilities that are required for a particular student's or warfighter in operations to have at the moment of need. And in order to achieve that, you need to be able to monitor that. So it's moving to a competency-based type model is something that we're working really hard instead of just looking at it, your basic training task list that you have to train and prepare for. So I think that's an important element to accelerate preparedness. Another element is how we can use novel technologies to support instruction, because we know there's a shortage there. And we need to be able to understand those very sophisticated heuristics by which expert instructors apply their knowledge and skills to train the students and get them prepared. And we want to ingest agents into the mix to support instructors and help students, warfighters, to achieve that preparedness. So there's a lot going on that front as well. So between that point of using advanced technologies and moving towards an adaptive training and readiness environment, those, in my mind, those are two critical components that will accelerate preparedness in the near future.
Can I take up on that point about preparedness? It's interesting you use that word, right? Because several years ago, in a different life, I went to a conference on disaster preparedness. And somebody said, what's the most valuable commodity you have in a crisis situation? And there was a pretty, you know, lot of different types of answers. But the one that came up most frequently and the one that he latched on was time. In a critical situation, your most valuable commodity is time. Time gives you the opportunity to think, plan, prepare, react properly. Now, in certain situations, you don't have that time available because you've got to act instantaneously. So one of the things that a simulation-based training environment can do is give you that time through the right level of practice and preparation. It reduces that pause before action. It reduces that need to consult before action because you know what you have to do. You have a model of behavior embedded in your brain that is the result of that training. They went on to talk about, you know, firefighters and guys who are expert, you know, safety evacuation mechanisms for buildings and so forth. And what they all had and described were very advanced mental models of behavior and outcomes. So they knew what was going to happen. And they were able to piece together, even in novel circumstances, bits of the jigsaw puzzle that would lead them to painting a picture and say, right, my expert intuition is leading me to the point of saying, I'm seeing this, I'm seeing that. I'm not quite seeing that bit so clearly, but I can see another portion of outcome. And it's leading me to make this decision. And that decision comes from this practice in simulation and that expert behavior that we're trying to instill. I know it's a different environment and different use case, but I think the model is applicable to what we're talking about here.
I think it's definitely pertinent to the discussion here. And it reminded me that it's not only time, right? It's also availability. Do we even have the opportunity to rehearse, to train, to get to the point where I am prepared? Where I can feel confident that I will undertake my mission and be successful. Look at a course the way it's structured today. When I train any type of course, I have a very rigid schedule. I start my course on this date, I graduate on that date, right? But if we're talking about an adaptive training environment, in order to guarantee skills and to have that fixed, then you need to have the schedule be flexible within reasons, right? So now you can see that every warfighter is trained and the training is tailored to their needs. So they progress forward and backwards as needed to ensure, to guarantee that preparedness, that proficiency. So time, availability, the use of next-gen training technologies, I think those are all great ingredients to ensure accelerated preparedness.
Sandro, I really liked one of your comments there that really reflects a lot about what CAE thinks about in terms of some of the andragogy of flying training in the military space in particular, and that's a migration away from a completion focus of training towards a competency mastery model of training. The idea that we're no longer going to fill squares like fly this number of hours, pass these tests, you're now considered qualified in a given discipline, but now we build a training system that relies on the demonstration of competence as a metric to pass and move forward on to the next phase of training, if you will. So that highlights sort of an emphasis on right time, right place, leveraging the latest and greatest technology to achieve that competency as a metric in and of itself.
Displaying competency is a really challenging issue, though. And you know, with the complexity of environment we've got today, we don't have the opportunity to display competency in a real situation in real time. You've got to do it in an offline simulated environment because it's just too complicated. It's too dangerous. But one of the things that simulation does give us is the opportunity to do safe, controlled, repeatable practice. And it's that repeatability and that practice element I think are so crucial because we all learn at different rates. we all have come to a situation with different experiences and knowledge and aptitudes. So therefore, we're all going to progress through to competency at a different pace. Opportunity within a simulated environment to tailor and be flexible to that environment is inherently part of the capability of a simulated environment. Part of the problem, though, is that we've applied a very logical, rhythmical process to the simulations that we use. You define a curricula, you set some maneuvers up, some activities, and you step through them in a logical fashion. What I don't believe they have is enough flexibility to create almost chaotic situations and scenarios that represent the real world. So one of the things that we've got to try and use this technology for is to be able to introduce complexity and have, you know, highly dynamic situations that reflect the ability of the student or learner in the situation. So it's monitoring what they're doing. It's seeing that they're doing really well or really poorly, or they're in the middle. And in real time, it's modifying the pace, complexity, dynamicism of the situation to keep that point, that student at the point where they're learning. They're not getting bored. They're not just passing through. They're not struggling and being stressed out because they know they're failing. And it's adapting itself through to keep them to that right learning point for them, shall we say, to be able to put our mind in the space of these younger people that are coming through and look at it from their perspective in terms of how they want and what would lead, engage, and motivate them.
You're referring to what we hear often in terms of reps and sets, the notion that we, through synthetic environments, through the use of adaptive and flexible training systems that scale, we have the ability to provide numerous iterations on very complex and very integrated training cycles by the use of simulation and technology. Is that tracking?
Absolutely. Yeah, when I look back, when I first started at the capability I had to define simulations, it was exceptionally limited. And it's highly dynamic now. And so look what could happen within a game-based environment. We're all using game engines for everything now. The capability that lends us does, I believe, open the door for this real-time intervention I'm looking for. We do it in live role play situations in other industries. In healthcare, for example, they'll have instructors who are monitoring the tempo of a collective simulation, a team-based simulation in real time, and they'll introduce events on the spot to change the dynamics of the situation. We need that flexibility in a simulated training environment at an individual and a collective mission level now.
We've been talking about the individual thus far, right? How do you prepare the individual? But more and more, future warfare missions, it's all about team preparedness, if you will. Not only your local team, but also if there's any type of joint mission. And how do you train for that? How do you accelerate preparedness for those very complex future warfare type environments?
That's a really interesting point, right? Because while I was listening to you then, I was thinking of like a sports analogy for this. And what we've got is a limited number of coaches. We've got a finite amount of expensive team members because they are expensive. By the time we get them into the system and get them to the point when they're ready to operate a military system. So what do we have to do? We've got to take all those individuals and get them to the right level of competency for their individual task. Right. So your position on the football pitch dictates what you're going to do. So you're going to learn that skill. Now, that almost like just gets you to the point of entry to the team. And if we think about it in, say, a flying analogy, you've got to have airmanship and advanced flying skills and system operational skills to be able to perform your role. That's got you onto the soccer team. That could all be done with AI. We don't need an expensive coach working on each person to get them to that point of mastery of their individual skill or their required role, right? But if you put them into the team context, now we're looking at a whole level, different level of activity that the expert, the coach, really can apply that human touch to, where their value can be truly realized is in that coordination. that anticipation of activities and maneuvers. You know, I always love it when I see football players running. They know the ball is going to come over their head and land at their feet because they practice this maneuver. The coach is guiding them through those anticipatory skills and then the next position on, because they've got those mental models we were talking about before. I think the sort of the coaches we have in the defense environment should be spending their time on those sorts of more advanced coordination, role awareness, situational awareness type skills that give them adaptability. You know, I was talking earlier about the ability to respond to complex situations. That's what you've got. If you're a master at your task, you've got highly evolved team coordination skills, an expert coach to help you refine them and put them into practice. You're then in a good place to deal with complex, unknown, rapidly changing situations.
We're talking really about human skills development at the appropriate level using the appropriate resources, in this case, human beings, bringing what they have unique amongst them. What we are seeing, though, as Sandro mentioned, some really extraordinary benefits to adopting synthetic instruction and evaluation methods. Now we have a new and expanding capability to provide assistance on lower level cognitive and behavioral tasks using artificial intelligence, machine learning, and a number of other tools at our disposal to strengthen those and save the human instructors for the things that are uniquely human, let's say. Does that track with you, Sandro?
There's a lot to discuss about. Even in Gary's scenario, I'm the team coach. Now I know all my players have the basic level of skills to participate in mission type related activities and training rehearsal for mission readiness, right? We also have capabilities to support that coach. They're not alone trying to track all these students and figuring out every individual's essay and see who's the weak link, who's the, you know, overachiever, so on and so forth. We have tools using AI, specifically machine learning classifiers, that in real time can start classifying your situation awareness. And so now we can extrapolate team situation awareness or shared situation awareness. There's different terms. And providing, if you will, that kind of team dashboard to the instructor would be, to me, a phenomenal application of these nascent technologies to help accelerate and scale the capabilities for accelerated preparedness.
Gary, let me transition to you for a quick question here regarding this recent study that we were able to conduct on artificial coaching and some artificial intelligence application here in flying training. Can you describe a little bit to us about what you were able to achieve?
So we took a medium-sized cohort of around 30 early phase flying cadets in Japan. And we took them through a number of maneuvers on a virtual reality-based flying chair. Whilst they were performing maneuvers, there was a monitoring system, an AI-based system, tracking their performance against some benchmark performance criteria. Now, that did a couple of things. It gave them a real-time cue from the virtual coach in Japanese into their headset. You know, speed might be too low, angle of attack too high, whatever it was. And then the second thing it did, it gave a post-event result grading for their performance in each of those maneuvers. And it was really interesting to see a couple of behaviors. The cadets were interrogating their performance. They were looking at their score, and you could hear sometimes them vocalizing to themselves about their own commentary on how they perform. So that's a good bit of awareness. It also had a real-time cognitive load index being displayed in real time, which they couldn't see during the maneuver, but they could see afterwards. So you could see points in the experience. When we spoke to them afterwards, they found that whole environment very motivating towards progression and development. Now, it's worth pointing out, up until that point, there was no instructor involved. This was all done virtually with an AI coach, providing systems that can capture coaching guidelines, but remove the coach from the real-time system and allow people to go through your reps and sets, as you describe it, without that expensive intervention of a coach. This is, I think, an extremely valuable opportunity. Now, in terms of performance of the system, we were actually able to show significant increases in performance over a limited amount of time. About an hour of training, we showed from 0 to 5 on a score, we were able to show a whole grade point average increase. In particular, we saw increases that were greater rate of increase for those students who were less able. So again, to that point, if you've got someone who has slightly inferior skills to the highest level performers in the class, you could argue that they're the ones that need your attention to keep them in the system. Now, the system was able to observe that performance, and through the repetitions that we gave them, we observed that those people actually increased more quickly in their skill level as a result of getting that feedback. Now, this is an extraordinary thing. We've got to leverage this to promote the, you know, the engagement, the motivation, the drive towards self-efficacy and confidence in someone's performance to ability to perform their task, and then, you know, drift into this expert role player situation we were talking about. So highly encouraged by the study, a lot to do, but it's given us the opportunity to prove the efficacy in the system that this type of approach to coaching can work. Interestingly, we had qualified flight instructors observing what was going on. One of the things that we were discussing with them while we were watching this happening in real time was the need for the adaptation and refinement of grading assessment. So when somebody is at their early level of skill development, you could have a wider window of acceptable performance. So there's more tolerance in the system for grading. And as they become more advanced and more competent in those skills, we can tighten that window. So we can be channeling them in the right direction without discouraging them or turning them off, motivating them towards the point of excellence so we get to a common baseline. And then that's the baseline at which a human instructor can then pick up on. You know, we're talking about what's the right point for the human to intervene in the system. It's like the flipped classroom model. Come to me when you're ready to ask the right question. Do your offline preparation on your own with an automated system. Come to me when you're ready to absorb my expertise. That's the point at which the real instructor needs to be in there, because that's when we can start engaging in these higher level order skills, you know, the ability to deal with complexity, the ability to evolve, you know, dynamic decision-making skills, which can't necessarily be practiced in a synthetic environment, but you can be coached and mastered and have things illustrated to you that would enable you to cope with the realities of a complex mission system.
Let me add to that real quick. So when we were, you know, maturing the synthetic coaching capabilities over the past few years, we used in the US, we used our Pueblo, Colorado initial flight training schoolhouse to kind of engage with the cadre of instructor pilots. And at first, we were expecting them to be a little bit resistant. Oh, what are you doing? What are you trying to inject? No, I want to control everything. What it turned out in a very quick time frame is that those instructor pilots came to me and said, you know, Sandro, this is going to be great because I can use this capability to get my students up to par on basic skills, and then I take them on an aircraft sortie, and I know they will be ready and take advantage of the sortie itself. So I don't have to waste time explaining them the basics again. So I was very surprised that there was almost zero resistance from instructors once they understood the application and the capabilities of these next generation technologies that we would bring online.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Is because there's two roles here. Yes, we've got to introduce it to the cadets, but we've also got to equip the instructors with an understanding of this new methodology, and from what basis it begins, where it goes. It's not a challenge or a threat. It's a supportive tool to them. It's going to help them with standardization of assessment. It's going to help them achieve a higher level outcome. It's going to capture as a legacy their skills and performance, you know, their ability to provide a better system at the end of the day. I think there will be as much effort needed on instructors as there is on the students. And if you think back to when they were learning to fly, they wouldn't have had such a system. Of course, it's going to be challenging and they're going to question it. They're going to want to understand its validity.
One of the things I like to think about often when we consider these high-level topics and largely theoretical topics of surrounding the notion of trust, of course, is data equals trust. If you can demonstrate clearly that you don't just have a good idea, but we've been able to apply that good idea in some measurable and beneficial way, and then show that some type of proof that it works. So Gary has provided an outstanding example of that today with our study. And the data on that is forthcoming. I know that you're both authoring a paper. We hope to see that at ITSIC and learn quite a bit more about this. To summarize then our discussion today, We've talked about the importance of moving from completion-focused models of training and education towards competency-based models supported by advances in artificial intelligence, machine learning, and the way in which we structure training and the way in which we think about applying technology to it. We've largely lived in the theoretical, like we've got good ideas, we think we can make it work, and now we are in practice where we have opportunity for Australia and a number of other partner nations to demonstrate these capabilities and really use them to move forward. So my thanks to you both, Sandro and Gary, for your superb insights today. Very much appreciate your time. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. And my thanks as well to our listeners for joining us today in this discussion as we look forward to sharing the next episode of CAE Catalyst with you. Thank you both very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of CAE Catalyst, Defense and Security Podcast. We hope this content has been a stimulus to your education, thought, and understanding as we expand awareness of the significant drivers within the defense industry to support mission readiness.